Coming up on the Star Wars Report podcast, a new Last Jedi trailer. It's coming. New images from The Last Jedi as well, and Billy Lord almost played Rey? Let's talk about that right now. Well, hello, hello, hey, howdy. Welcome back to the Star Wars Report podcast. I'm so glad that you've joined us. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Please delete as you find whatever. It's the Star Wars Report, everybody! Yay! I swear, like, we only podcasted a few days ago because we were late last week. And now we're starting a new time slot, so it's like within a few days. It's a humdinger. It's a humdinger of a show and a life, and it's craziness here at the Star Wars Report podcast, just about the most fun hour of podcasting this side of the outer rim. I'm your host, Riley Blanton. So glad you've joined us and have decided to choose to spend your valuable time here with us as we talk about that galaxy far, far away. Mr. Mark Herleman joins me right now on the program. How's it going, Mark?
It's going well. It's phenomenal to be here. It's always fun every time I come down into my studio. Sometimes I don't spend enough time down here.
I know. It's good to have you back on the show today. Bruce is out. He is traveling hither and thither as our resident weatherman. But he's been on the program before. In fact, he was involved in the production of a Star Wars film, and you bet we're going to talk to him more about that in the back half of the program in a segment I like to call Riley Blanton Asks Borderline Inappropriate Questions About Natalie Portman. That's going to be the second half of the show, but he's here for the first half as well. It's Warren. How's it going, man?
G'day, folks. Yeah, going really well. I'm talking to you from the future, remember?
Oh, this is true. This is true.
That's so good. Nice. Morning
from down under. Warren, right. It's good to have you back on the show. Now, I was too cowardly. I chickened out of trying to pronounce your last name since I didn't have it in front of me. And it's not that it's Duxbury, right?
That's correct.
See, I just didn't want to mess it up, and I didn't have the Skype up. I had the show notes up, so I wanted to make sure I got it right.
I'd have butchered it. I'm just terrible reading any name.
Well, that's
it. No problems, Riley Blanton.
All right, no, enough of all this. There's some actually, it's only been a few days, but there is some news.
We have something to report.
Come closer, I have good news.
Data brought to us by the Bothan spies.
We can send a clear transmission.
There it is. Listen.
That's right. We do have some news. It's always interesting. There's a whole lot going on in the world of Star Wars, and we're just kind of getting towards that phase where it gets really, really crazy. But I wanted to talk a little bit this week because we have trailer news, because this is what we talked about on last week's program, Mark. I remember distinctly one Bruce Gibson coming out and saying we're going to get a trailer this week. Well, it doesn't look like that's the case. What do we got here, Mark?
Well, what I'm curious about, too, because Bruce was onto something else when he mentioned about Twitter and certain people jumping off of Twitter. And we've got Mark Hamill tweeting when we're going to get the trailer. And if he's right, does this mean that Mark Hamill's going to have to leave Twitter, too? Like, they're going to boot him off, or the fans are going to come at him because he's spoiling us on when we're going to find out? No, on September 17th, Mark Hamill, he responded to a fan on Twitter asking when exactly we're going to get that new trailer that we're all wanting to know about The Last Jedi. When would it appear? And he replied, watch Monday Night Football on Monday, October 9th, for no reason in particular. You know, it's my daughter's birthday, so I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to have a chance to be watching. I'm like, where are we going to have this party at? Are we doing it at Abby's or someplace that's got some football in the background?
That's your daughter's birthday. I was about to plan like a live stream. We could do like a lot. Remember last year we did that. That was a lot of fun. I don't know, Warren, are we supposed to take something from this? I feel like it's a hint.
I feel if you're a Star Wars fan and you're not following Mark Hamill or Ron Howard, then what are you doing? These guys are letting secrets come left, right, and center.
I know, right?
We also tweeted just earlier this week that Marvel already gave away the entire plot for The Last Jedi in their, 1970s or 1980s comic?
Wait, really?
I mean, Hamill has fun with the fans. That's
he
the
does.
Beauty of Hamill.
He does, and I love Mark Hamill's Twitter. And yeah, watch. It's happening Monday, October 9th. Like, it's definitely, this just hasn't been officially announced. But they will,
Riley,
soon.
Do you think that Hamill and, like, Fisher and Ford, they're like the three people in all of Star Wars that can do and say whatever they want, and they're never going to have to worry about any hand slapping?
Yeah, pretty much, right? You know, listen, God bless them, but I don't think, like, even the new cast, I don't think could get away with this.
That's what I question, because it seems like with the new cast, a lot of things, like, if it's not specifically towards photo shoots that they're doing and things of that nature, like, they're very tight-lipped. They only leak what they want to leak. Whereas Carrie Fisher, you know, we know she would shoot from the hips. Whatever came to her mind, she was letting it fly. And Hamill seems to kind of fall in that same era, I guess.
Yeah, he does. And I'll tell you what, I just enjoy, he's very honest and just like, not in corporate. That's what I love about it. Like, seriously, it's amazing. And I'll tell you what. I want to do a live stream. Mark, you think you can make it, or you think you'll be busy? I feel like we need to, like, live stream all the nerds.
Well, it's Monday, so I think I'm gonna be in the clear because my daughter should be at dance.
Yeah. Well. Well. I think that sounds like
a plan. I'm
going
to have to watch that date with a fine screen lens.
I know. Sounds like a plan to me. Yeah, and this makes perfect sense. This kind of confirms, I feel like somebody on last week's show was talking about how it needed to be a premiere on a more mainstream, non-nerd outlet of getting one last big trailer in. Oh, wait, that was me. So I claim credit for being right. Although Bruce was right too, but not in the time frame. It definitely won't be this week.
All I have now is hoping that we get another trailer after the one on October 9th for Thor. And then I'll be like, I was right too!
Yeah, when does... Because Thor's not till like the end of October or November, isn't it?
Yeah, it's November. Yeah, it's a November release, so...
Oh, well, nice. Let's see. Oh, and then also I wanted to toss in this article real quick because Business Insider put together a compilation of new image releases. These are official releases from Lucasfilm Disney on The Last Jedi. Now, we won't go through the whole thing. It's like, it's a gajillion pictures. 25 new photos from The Last Jedi. A lot of them are featuring Act 2. Gesundheit. And
bless you.
It's pretty amazing. Mark, did any of these particularly jump out to you?
Dude, right off the bat, that first one alone, you know, you're looking at Rey, she's looking over at Luke, there's a bench made out of the natural stone behind her, but what jumped out to me is Luke's coming out of a building structure. This doesn't look to be the hallway out that when he goes, time for the Jedi to end. I mean, that looked like it was in a tree. This looks like an actual lived-in building. So yeah. I wonder if Luke takes her to a second site, you know, not just his place, but maybe the original Jedi temple that was hinted about being here.
That would be amazing. I loved these. Some of these jumped out to me too. I'll tell you what, a lot of these are behind the scenes type shots, but that one of Mark Hamill with just the stone in the background, it's amazing.
Is that the darker garb one that they talk about?
Yeah, he's got this sort of poncho looking thing. Warren, any of these jumping out to you?
Yeah, the shots of Rose and John Boyega's Finn, the background looks very reminiscent of the A New Hope. The panels on the wall look very similar to those in Tantive 4. So I don't know, they're really throwing back to that sort of whole hallway look from the original Star Wars film.
Yeah, that's true. And then you also see, you get to see a lot more of Finn and Rose in their kind of dynamic back and forth. Because the thing is I'm still pretty unspoiled, so when I see some of these official images, like, I'm learning new stuff. Like the idea of, I kind of had an idea that Finn and Rose would be going back and forth just from what they've kind of already released or hinted at. But you can be, to see some of these images of them just going at it, it looks like they have some of the very A New Hope Leia Han dynamic of just going back and forth and snipping at each other. And there's this great picture of them in the casino planet thing. That's pretty sweet looking.
I love the clapboard.
Like they have They had some chemistry.
Yeah, definitely. And again, I don't know whether it would be romantic or not. Oh, one that I really like here also, the First Order is a first peek at that Dreadnought, which we saw some pictures of on the packaging.
Oh, yeah.
That looks sweet.
I just love the angle on the X-Wing. And what I was saying a second ago, too, we see the clapboard for the movies, the Millennium Falcon. It's like, how come they haven't thought of doing that before? Like, that's just brilliant.
Oh, wait, I missed that one. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's like Admiral Akbar or another Mon Cal aide. But no, that one of the picture with the Dreadnought, I mean, the first thing I saw that leapt out was the lens flare of, I don't think that's one of the engines. I think it's just a lens flare in general. But the way it makes a mist around that X-Wing looks really cool. And you can see there's asteroid belt back behind the actual Dreadnought itself, which at first I thought was like a smudge on my computer screen. I'm all trying to wipe it off. Then I realized, oh, no, it's actually
there. The design. This X-Wing has like this big like central engine in the back. What is that? That's a weird looking.
That's the lens flare type thing. I don't think it's an engine. I think that's supposed to be the lens flare.
Warren, break the
tie. Could that possibly be the booster that everyone's been talking about that Poe Dameron has fitted to his ship that makes it different to all the other X-Wings?
I want to see.
Apparently, he has to get out of a tricky situation, I've heard, and he's got a booster that no other pilot has.
Interesting.
I love that idea too. That like the hotshot. It's sort of like Fast and Furious where they have the NOS. It's just like they get in the high gear and just.
Oh, I love that reference. Thank you so much.
And we see a very brooding Kylo Ren. As far as the designs and some of the new stuff we're seeing, I absolutely love the look and the concept of the Praetorian Guard. The thing is, here's what happens in Star Wars, though. You always have these amazing concepts and designs, and then you just like never really see them in action. I really want to see these guys actually kick some butt. I felt that way in Rogue One with the... we never really got to see the Death Troopers in action properly. Like, the coolest shot of the whole movie is them freaking like jumping out of the back of the transport in battle and taking some shots, and that was cool, but it wasn't enough. You need to really see them.
What if we find out that the new the First Order took the original Death Trooper program and that's what these guys are? I mean, I'm in the same boat. I want to see them be awesome and action-packed, but I keep coming around to who are they going to be fighting? Like, this isn't going to be well for them if it's Luke and Rey, but can they go up against anyone else? Because if they go up against anyone else, you kind of think like they're going to have to win, right? Like, they go up against the Rebels or the Resistance. Resistance ain't going to hold up against those guys, right?
Yeah.
Maybe?
No, I don't think so. Yeah, I don't know.
I keep looking at their helmets trying to work out how do they see out of those things. I'm picturing a whole heap of cosplayers in the future just bumping into each other and walking in the walls.
I mean, that's the story. That's the story of Star Wars cosplay. And we got some great...
The other thing about this is that they did confirm that this movie is going to, which we've been told before, take place right after the last one. And I think the picture of Kylo's face, when you see the scar there and how fast that heals, it makes me think about the way the lightsabers cauterize the wound at the same time. Kylo could be healed real fast because it's not that deep. Whereas with Finn, we may find out that part of Finn's being left in that booth or something is the problem, the fact that the lightsaber cauterized the wound as it went. I mean, going right along your spine, having the wound open and immediately closed again, having to go in and reopen that and fix it, like that could easily take him out a lot longer. Because at first I wasn't sure about that. I'm like, shouldn't they both have like band-aids on their faces or something? Like, how fast should this really heal? But then I was thinking about the cauterizing angle. Like, maybe it shouldn't take as long as I'm used to.
Seeing all these images really just makes me think about The Last Jedi a lot more. And like, it raises the question of just like, I don't know, guys, is it gonna be different?
Ryan has written a story that's unexpected but right. Some of the stuff that happens, people are gonna be like, oh my god. It feels like its own thing.
Everything is being shifted in an opposite way to what the audience expected after 7. Fresh and new.
I'm hoping it'll be a little shocking, but I'm hoping it'll feel real and honest.
What's the twist? There's a twist. As a twist, I say CI so badly now, I'm getting that bug to where I want to read spoilers, but no, I don't. But there's a twist.
I have a feeling the twist is going to be, when we get done with this film, we're going to be no different than when we started the film. The only difference is Luke's going to be like, let's go.
Don't say that. No. Warren, what's the twist?
From that angle, I could see Luke just sitting out, and for Luke and Rey, that being that struggle of, how do I get Luke Skywalker off of this? How do I get Maui to take the heart back?
I just want to know, Maui, I just want to know whether or not in the crawl we're going to find out who Kylo Ren's barber is, because he's obviously had a haircut since the last show, last movie.
Yeah, he's got to style it up a little bit, a little less, you know, outlandish. a little bit more combed back, I guess. And then, of course, we get some great pictures of Rian Johnson. It's just cool. I love the imagery here. It's awesome. It's The Last Jedi. It's different. Everything is shifting in the opposite way that the audience was expecting after 7. I'm memorizing this clip, by the way. Oh, man. Okay. All right. All right, folks. You are listening to the Star Wars Report podcast. And, of course, this program is only made possible by the fine folks who are supporting us over at patreon.com/StarWarsReport. A big shout-out and thanks to you guys for making that happen. You can join the folks who are supporting us and get some really cool bonus content, like the weekly Rogue Transmissions broadcast. We had a fun post-show discussion last week on the program where Riley had more to get off his chest when it comes to the whole J.J. Abrams taking over thing. So that was last week's Rogue Transmissions. We're going to be recording another post-show discussion, but we always like to throw out some cool bonuses like that. Join the Facebook chat exclusive to Star Wars Report patrons, and of course, get your T-shirt and join our monthly Skype roundtable of the Bothan High Council. That's right. There's a Bothan High Council. We invented it. There is one, and you can join it at patreon.com/StarWarsReport. That's patreon.com/StarWarsReport. And actually, I want to send a big shout out to Rhett Gibbs, who's our most recent patron, and we actually just joined him, just got him in on the Facebook chat. So big shout out to you, sir. You are our featured patron supporter for this week, and we do thank you for supporting us. Make it happen. Pledge a dollar and join the tip jar. patreon.com/StarWarsReport. That's patreon.com/StarWarsReport. That's right. It is the Star Wars Report podcast. Let's jump straight back into it. Mark, we had a couple stories that I know you wanted to hit up too that we need to get in on the program here. Besides just the Last Jedi stuff, there's some other interesting stuff coming our way. Actually, we're learning something a little bit about Billy Lord when it comes to not The Last Jedi, when it comes to The Force Awakens.
Yeah, that's true. Jedi News actually reported a few days back. We were going to talk about it on one of the other shows. I think it was 2 episodes ago, maybe even last episode. I know we've bounced this topic around so much that I'm glad we get around to it. But there was an interview, and we find out that Billy Lord was actually asked by J.J. She says, J.J. Abrams called me to come in for Star Wars because he couldn't find someone for the lead, she said, while talking on the Ellen DeGeneres show. And I, for me, I think one of the interesting things about this is the fact that, you know, it felt like a no-brainer when you heard Billy Lord originally was auditioning. You're like, oh man, she's got to be the daughter of Han and Leia. Like, I mean, how solidified do you think the fandom would have been had that been the case, right?
I mean, I think it's way too overt a casting choice, because then if they don't go there, then it's just like, well, then come on, guys, why'd you do it? But if they do go there, then it's telegraphing and you lose all the mystery. And also, to be honest, this is kind of goes back to the mystery box that we were talking about last week. You know, they didn't have all the plans of, like, the lineage. You know, J.J. Abrams didn't have all the lineage and, you know, who is Snoke and, like, what does the vision mean and exactly what was the deal with the Knights of Ren. I don't think he had the entire backstory completely written out. Same with Wade George Lucas didn't when he did you know, when he wrote the original Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
But that's okay. You know, like, it goes back to the JJ thing from last week. It doesn't have to be a giant, big humdinger of a to-do. It's okay. It's okay to not have every technical story beat. If you know what the story's about, as far as what motivates the characters and what those characters are about, that's what J.J. Abrams does so well. But we won't retread all the territory from that. Interesting bit of comic news. Marvel's actually going to release Storms of Krayt, this one-shot comic that's going to arrive December 27th. In Star Wars The Last Jedi, Storms of Krayt number one, written by Ben Acker and Ben Blacker. And they did the Join the Resistance art by Mike Mayhew. And they're following up The Last Jedi with a comic series, it looks like. And this actually looks pretty interesting. This one rewinds, though, to this Galactic Civil War. So this is like a Luke Skywalker, Princess Leia adventure as they take up arms on the salt-covered world and search for a new rebel base.
Mm-hmm. The cover on that one looks beautiful, man. You can't go wrong with Mayhew's art.
There it is. Yeah, you put it in the notes. Oh, dude, mm-hmm. Add this episode 299 on the show notes. Oh my goodness, that looks glorious.
The mm-hmm. whole idea reminds me so much of the Splinter of the Mind's Eye novel. So it came out after A New Hope and a story of Luke and Leia. Could this be a similar sort of story? Could they be trying to rehash what they did with that?
Well, and so it's the salt planet. This is the same planet that is featured in The Last Jedi. So they're just going back in time on the same location,
mm-hmm.
which is interesting. I don't know how I feel about that. I don't know.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those things where when they talk about, well, we're also fleshing out the new universe. Like, yeah, but we're doing it in really weird ways. Like, this ties to that movie, and therefore we've got to write a original trilogy story with these characters because that's the only way the fans are going to know. Like I worry about when we do that too often, yeah. But I think with this one, because we have so little on Luke and so little on Leia right now, that you're going to the one era that right now playing with them is safe. So that makes sense. And I think really the main purpose of everything that is the journey to The Force Awakens, the journey to The Last Jedi, it's really not a journey to the movie. It's a journey to get you to understand the locations and maybe a couple players in the background, but it's not really going to lead you up into it. You know, it's not like some other books that we've got that Before the Awakening, for example. That one leads more into it than any of the other books that we got with The Force Awakens.
Yeah, no, makes sense. So yeah, that's coming out after The Last Jedi, right at the end of the year. Also, the Phasma comic is out, right? It just they just had the first issue that released.
Yes. Number one has come out just this last week. StarWars.com, they had an interview with the artist Marco Checco, I believe is how you say his name. I'm probably butchering it because I'm reading it off the page here. But yeah, he broke down a couple of the first five pages and stuff. There was some really great art there as well. He talks about page one, the most difficult page to do, so he did that one at the end of issue one. But they start off with a big splash of Phasma. He wanted to make it a little Easter egg, so the door behind her is the exact same door that we see in the trash compactor of A New Hope. So that's kind of cool, a little Easter egg there. Page two, it was his first page. That's the literal first page he did of the miniseries. He watched The Force Awakens many times. He loves it. It gave him the pages, the same atmosphere of the movie, which, you know, looking at it, you could really tell he did his homework. He used it to study lots of elements like Phasma, the backgrounds, and also what the new stormtroopers look like. With page three, he talks about the story by Kelly Thompson. It's so intriguing, and the script is so well written that it pretty much draws itself on this page. And of course, I'm going to attach the link so you guys can see the pages as well. But on this page, we can see Captain Phasma's cape is very useful. It's not just an accessory. Phasma actually uses the cape to block blaster shots. Like, grabs it, lifts it up, kind of a comma style, like what the clones would do back in the Clone Wars. Yeah, pretty awesome. I like that. Page four and five, Kelly has some great taste for spectacular scenes and knows exactly when the artist needs space to do an open scene. In these pages, he was asked to draw Poe Dameron's X-Wing, and he wants to be precise with the atmosphere. He usually adds some parts of color to the pages, so that way the colorist has an easier job when they get around to it. And the other thing about this comic, I believe, is it introduces us to BB-9E, and we find out Phasma is the reason why BB-9E is still around.
the reverse, the evil twin BB-8.
Everybody's saying evil, but like, I mean, haven't we learned nothing in this new canon? Like, the Empire's not so evil anymore, man.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. All right, we won't go there. That's a whole nother can of worms. I also like the way the comic's written in first person. So I've been more of a comics person than a books person when it comes to the, which I've made no secret, when it comes to the new canon. I actually saw Rogue One number one in a pack of like Marvel comics that you could buy. It was like $3 for $5. And so like I got X-23 number one and then Rogue One number one. And so like I plan on cracking that open. And I was talking to Mark before the show. I think my next my next read is going to be the Vader series. I saw it in Barnes & Noble, and I started flipping through it, and I was pretty intrigued. So I think the comics look that the Vader series looks pretty good. I'm not going to lie.
It's interesting, too, because like when we were talking about this, you were surprised that they were doing another Phasma. And we were talking just last episode, in fact, of how the comics are really kind of telling the stories that the movie audience wants to know. I mean, you know, this isn't Phasma before The Force Awakens like the novel is. This is Phasma literally on the heels of where she was in The Force Awakens. So that's, you know, that's what I've been itching for, dying to know. And we're finally getting there.
It's
so
interesting because it
makes me curious.
Warren, I'm going to take your temperature on this, because this is something I've talked about to a lot of Star Wars friends off air. But when it comes to Phasma, Delilah Dawson pitched it at Dragon Con. We were at the book launch party. They sold a bunch. They were signing. It was great. But she pitched the book as, this is why did I just blank on the movie? Oh, this is Mad Max Fury Road meets Star Wars. It's the story of Captain Phasma in the early years and basically how she got to be this super hardcore BA, super trooper. Now, here's my problem. That actually sounds like a really great book. My problem with the way the new canon is working when they start doing books about when they choose Captain Phasma or Chewie and the Porgs, that's kind of an unfair comparison. But even like with some of the other new books coming out, when the secondary characters fail to... If Captain Phasma had like one or two incredible scenes in The Force Awakens that made you think, man, this is an amazing character, I really want to read more, then I would be way more sold on the idea of Mad Max Fury Road meets Star Wars. But the fact that it's Captain Phasma just makes me hesitant. Mark, Warren, I'll start with you. Have you read any of Phasma? And I don't know, am I being too reactionary here?
No, I haven't. But of all the books that have come out recently, it's the one that sort of piqued my interest. Everyone goes on about how much how underused the character was in The Force Awakens. So to my mind, then, there's so much more about that character that we could find out. And I think of all the characters that we know about from The Force Awakens leading into The Last Jedi, she's probably the most intriguing to myself, to find out exactly what makes her tick and how does she fit then into what's about to happen with the New Order.
Yeah.
Or the First Order.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, I don't plan to read it at this point, but I'm open. I'm interested in seeing what else comes out. And who knows? Maybe I'll change my mind. They've got the 40th anniversary thing at New York Comic Con that they're putting out too. That's going to be interesting.
I keep thinking that they should have put this book out in the last year. If they should have done this 2 years ago when they had The Force Awakens. I mean, I think about Rose and her sister's characters in that same light. Like, we should be getting, you know, some TV spots talking about them. We should get, like, maybe a comic kind of leading in about them. Like, I don't understand the idea of keeping side characters mysterious when they're just background side characters maybe even new characters that are going to be part of your new core group. I mean, Lando Calrissian wasn't in the first Star Wars film that we all saw, but he eventually became a mainstay. I don't know. For me, it's like, I think this is the opportunity that you launch those type of books. You don't wait until after the movie to do it because... I mean, I guess they do because that is kind of the nature of the beast. They did that with all the Maul stuff when they had Maul disappear in the Clone Wars. They're like, we're going to do a Maul book. It's going to be Lockdown. Oh, we're going to find out about how Maul escapes from being locked down in prison from when Sidious catches him. Oh, no, this is set way in the past when he was still his apprentice. Like,
yeah.
So I guess that is the business model. True. I've just never understood it.
Yeah, that's
fair. I think what we're experiencing now is this backlash with the secrecy surrounding J.J. Abrams and not letting anyone, including all the licensees, know what was going on. We've got Rathars now as a toy line rather than, you know, what's about to come up in The Last Jedi. We're experiencing all this stuff from 2 years ago, and we should have had it 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm. That's a good
Warren,
point. I didn't even think about that.
I gotta say, Warren, that's a really good point because it's probably tough because, like, I understand the desire for secrecy. Do we do it again
with Episode 9?
Yeah, and the answer is yes. It's JJ. That's how he operates. Like, there were multiple stories behind the scenes of, like, Bad Robot really kind of shutting a lot of Lucasfilm out of the production process and not wanting to share anything unless they absolutely had to with anyone outside of people who are directly making decisions. And I kind of sympathize with them because, guess what? The Force Awakens was a pretty darn good movie. Like, it was really good. Like,
well, I mean, it's the one you've got to get right. And I guess the only other one in this trilogy that you have to get right is the end. I mean, like, if you're going to get the ones you're not going to botch, you better make sure it's those ones. And you definitely want to be tight-lipped with our fandom. I mean, we take anything way too seriously.
My thoughts that I don't know why, but this just this feeling, this gut feeling that, like, this movie's going to be really good. Like, and it makes me actually feel kind of bad. Like, semi-nauseous that I have this great feeling about this movie because I'm like, no, temper your expectations. Stop it. But I keep doing it. All right, well, let's rewind the clock. We're out of news, but I wanted to talk to Warren. Warren, you were so kind. A couple months ago, I guess it was, you were so kind to kind of come and open the old time machine and talk a little bit about a Star Wars movie that you are part of. It's now time for Riley Asks Warren Questions About the Production of Attack of the Clones, the Natalie Portman edition. Warren, thanks for playing along, actually. all right, so, because last time we heard all kinds of great stories. You had talked about how you totally ticked off Anthony Daniels. How you met Christopher
Lee. Which isn't hard to do.
As previously discussed. Let's talk about it. And for people who haven't heard that episode, what all were you up to on the set of Attack of the Clones? What was your involvement, and how did that come about?
Well, just quickly, I was asked to come across to Fox Studios. I was working at Foxtel, which is a television station here in Australia, and asked to come across as a puppeteer. I was the only puppeteer that worked at Foxtel, so naturally I got the gig. But unfortunately, a lot of the puppets that were on the shelf that had been brought over from the US to use in Attack of the Clones were all left on the shelf because Lucas was so into creating everything digitally. So I got to work with C-3PO and R2-D2 and got to also work as a creature handler on the set.
Nice.
And so what was the first time? So we've heard about some of the other cast. Hayden, Natalie, when they were on set, were you ever involved? Any good stories there?
My Natalie Portman story really goes, it comes before we actually started shooting. I met Natalie for the first time along with Ahmed Best and Natalie's friend who was by her side the whole time, a female friend who'd come out from the US with her to stay with her the whole time she was in Australia. I got to meet those guys at the cast and crew party that was essentially the night before filming started. And the music was playing and no one was up dancing. And Natalie was like sort of fidgeting, wanted to have a dance. So myself and Ahmed Best and Natalie's friend, we got up and started dancing. So my recollection or memory of Natalie is dancing with her on the dance floor when nobody else would. Could you believe nobody would dance with Natalie Portman?
Oh, my gosh.
All right, stop. Stop. Everybody, stop. Just, you need to give everybody a minute. And by everybody, I mean me. Just a chance to breathe for a second and process this information. Because there's so much here. All right. Let me tell you, I was literally, I had a cracked, I promise this is related. I cracked my iPhone screen yesterday, and so I was going by the Apple Store Linux Square Mall. And in this giant billboard in the center of the mall is this, like, Natalie Jour advertising campaign for some kind of makeup. And you can tell how much I know about this stuff. And there's Padme, like, in giant, giant, giant print form in the center of the mall. And I'm like, oh, that, you know, in my mind, it's like, isn't that cool? Like, she's had such an amazing career beyond Star Wars, but I've always think of Natalie Portman because, of course, my Star Wars connection is Padme. That's really cool. And then, like, that's literally me earlier today. I'm like, huh, look, it's Natalie Portman. That's awesome. She's gorgeous. Look at that. That's a cool. And then, like, 3 hours later, nobody. All right, two things. One, all right, given. It's awesome. You're at the cast and crew party. There's a dance. Why would nobody? Is it the intimidation factor? Is it the.
What song was playing?
That's.
Well, we're talking about songs from the 90s, guys, so not many people get up and dance to those nowadays. So.
Oh, see, I'm a 90s kid. I jammed all that.
Well, think about
it. I'm down. The
groove is in the heart.
Yeah. Nice.
But, my memories of that night, looking over in the corner, Jay Legaia and Tamira Morrison were in their own world having a catch-up and a chat. And poor old Natalie and a friend just wanted to dance, so myself and Arvid Best, made that happen.
That's
nice.
A service to the greater good of our fine world. I was about to say country, but we're not even from the same country. It's a service to the universe.
It was either that or stand there talking to Anthony Daniels for the rest of the night.
No, I got the loaded question now. So you're there, Natalie Portman. It's you and Ahmed Best. Which one of you is the better dancer?
Ahmed Best for sure.
Oh, you're like, come on, please just let me bust the move.
Can he that guy can tango. I bet you anything.
I bet he could. Yeah, he just definitely seems to have that dexterity.
Which isn't that.
But you know you want to be the one to outdance. You're like, this is my time to shine. I've got to win Natalie.
Legit question. So, but it wasn't just like he was better than you. He's a good dancer.
Yeah, he had all the right moves. Yeah, he's a good and a fun guy to have around the set. I'm just so sad that his role was diminished as much as it was.
That's so much irony right here.
Do you know, did you get to watch some of those scenes, like your own personal deleted scenes of Ahmed Best awesomeness Jar Jar that got cut out?
No, I didn't get to experience much of Ahmed on screen. Like I said, the role was diminished, and ended up doing a fair bit of video documentary stuff, like going around with the documentary crew and interviewing people, but I don't think he really got the recognition for that. I'm trying to think back to whether or not I can remember seeing him in those behind the scenes documentaries.
You don't. So he was
those
like
might have been the
camera
ones that they used to put up on the official site's forums. They used to have a lot of those. If you were a VIP member of Hyperspace and it's Star Wars Insider, you could go in and log in and get to see a lot of those videos. The original trilogy, or sorry, the prequel trilogy, they did that a lot. Like I came into episode 3 and just caught the tail end of that, but episode 1 and 2 especially, there were a lot of documentaries that Lucas was having put up each day and stuff. It was kind of cool.
Yeah, and they put
unfortunately, sorry guys.
Oh no, I was just saying, sorry, we're all talking over each other because we're so excited about all this. That's the webisodes. But also I just want to point out, I don't want to walk back but just stroll by the fact of the just height of irony that a talented, well-coordinated dancer, Ahmed Best, played Jar Jar Binks. Like, let's think about that for a half second. Okay, we did. All right.
You know, that could have been one of the things Jar Jar was good at before he was exiled.
He started a pretty okey day with a brisky morning munchie.
And he did woo a princess. Yeah, I mean, think about that in the Clone Wars. He did woo a princess. Like, she was totally down for the Jar Jar. Mooey Mooey got the movies.
Sorry, stop it. I forgot about that episode. Oh, that was so bad. But as far as Attack of the Clones goes, how long was the production process in Australia? Was it like a few months or?
Yeah, from memory, I was brought on board around July, and they had wrapped up, and I think they were wrapped up by Christmas and already moving on to the Tunisia stuff that they were going to film, and also out to Italy.
Yeah, and I know that because you had shot the scene, like the, he's holding me back. That was in studio, right?
That was all at Fox Studios. Yeah, it was the tiniest studio on the lot. It was a very small, it was almost like a garden shed compared to all the other warehouse style lots. But yeah, it was everything you see in that garage set almost took up the entire expanse of that small little space. So there wasn't a lot of room for people, a lot of crew to be in there. So a lot of the stuff there was shot quite intimately with Natalie Portman and bringing C-3PO to life. And then eventually having Anthony Daniels jump into the suit as well.
Interesting. Because it's interesting because, like, I know with the... Here's a movie example. With the Chronicles of Narnia, we had the original one. They shot in chronological order, but I know that's kind of rare for filmmaking, that actually it's more typical, especially if you have, like, on set and then you have on location shooting. You just can't shoot in chronological order. So it's not like... So they would have shot that scene of Anakin's rage long before he was actually out there slaughtering Tuskens in Tunisia.
Well, no, the Tusken Raider camp was actually also on set in Sydney in one of the other, the smaller backlots as well.
Oh, no way. Nice. See, and yes, this is interesting because, like, what were some of the bigger sets, like, as far as when it comes to working on Attack of the Clones? Because, you know, that one's really small, but as far as the bigger ones?
Yeah, the bigger sets were, included the nightclub sequence. That was taking up one entire soundstage, and the Coruscant street scene where the characters were running through the streets being chased by Sam Wessel. That was basically one long street with a couple of little alleyways, and it was just dressed differently from shot to shot to make it look like it was quite a rabbit warren of corridors and streets. But it was just one long street, but it took up an entire soundstage.
Oh, wow. So when you're there, does it look and feel Star Warsy, or most of that all added digitally?
There was a lot added digitally. Some of the sound stages just had blue draped, you know, curtains everywhere. For example, Dex's diner was just a little diner cart in the middle of this massive studio, and it was just completely surrounded by blue curtains and
was this
green and blue.
Yeah, sorry, you broke green up there. Yeah, no, it's
Wow. See, that's the one thing I was thinking about. All the clones that they had in the prequel trilogy, they weren't there. You know, they were all computer generated. And the fact that now you've got actual First Order troopers, people in the armor walking around, like the feel of what that must have been like. Thinking about from your point of view, like you were robbed, man.
Exactly. Robbed of the job that I was employed to do, and also robbed of seeing all those great costumes. And Lucas would quite often rub his hands together and say, oh, this is great. Think of all the money we're going to save. But yeah, it just didn't have that ambiance that I would imagine working on The Last Jedi or The Force Awakens would have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I just did
when you watch shows...
Sorry, go ahead, Mark. Harley.
Well, I was thinking about shows like Game of Thrones where, you know, you watch what they're doing with the White Walkers and the costumes that they have and the little green screen spots that they add to it to take away the nose and to make the mouth skeleton-like and stuff like that. Like, the technology there that's utilizing both fields at the same time, boy, that really works.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mentioned to Riley last time that the Geonosians were just a couple of guys in green leotards.
Oh, really? Oh, wow.
We had no idea what they looked like.
All right, I had to. were you part of the... Yeah, because, like, I just did a quick... Just for funsies, I did a quick Google image search of Attack of the Clones behind the scenes. And there's a lot of blue. Now, listen, I always think...
A lot of blue and a lot of green.
Yeah, a lot of blue and a lot of green. I was always... Here's the thing. I always think that just saying Attack of the Clones is a bad movie because of a lot of green screen, that's a cheap and easy target. The problems with Attack of the Clones, and listen, I love every Star Wars movie. I'm sure we all do, but they all have their flaws, and we all get to discuss them to death. You know, podcasting about this for so long, you know, it's almost like every version of this conversation has been had. But I will say this: seeing the way some of the imagery goes, I think the problems with Attack of the Clones are not the over-reliance on technology. That's one thing I hate about criticisms like the whatever the YouTube thing is that did like these multi-hour... I can't even remember the name of it. This is how... Maybe I wiped it from my brain. But the point being is that there are some really legitimate story critiques that we can do of Attack of the Clones that are much more about the writing and the character motivations and the pacing and
absolutely.
The chemistry than the behind the scenes.
The sets and location can't be blamed. I mean, they went to those beautiful lakeside buildings in Italy,
yeah.
which were just gorgeous, and you definitely can't fault some of the scenery and even the stuff that was done digitally, like the Geonosian arena. It was gorgeous. It was so well crafted in the computer.
Yeah. Yes, because some of it didn't work, but man, you really like the Geonosis battle. That was incredible, incredible work.
Hmm.
Yeah. No, it's and like, man, there's Sam Jackson. Man, I'm actually kind of getting flashbacks as a kid when I first watched Attack of the Clones. We borrowed the VHS edition from some friends and family, and this is probably years into me knowing about Star Wars, and we'd already seen I think most of the Star Wars films, but we hadn't seen Attack of the Clones yet. My sister Bethany and I, and we're you know, as with every film, we're like, hey, can we see the next one now? Can we see the next one now? No, we gotta wait till everybody's here. It's, you know, it's a family event. And I, with Attack of the Clones, there's a friend of mine, there's a family that we were really close with that we would reenact the scenes from the movies, and if I hadn't seen the movie yet, he would just explain it to me. And so he, like, explained the entire Count Dooku confrontation, and we would literally break out the, like, $5, they're definitely not $5 anymore, plastic lightsabers, the cheap ones that didn't light up because we beat them half to death. And we would reenact the end of Attack of the Clones. We did it several times, and we would just like practice it and get our blocking right and get the spacing right and make sure we all and you know, like, he would correct lines if we got them wrong. And his name was Daniel Patterson. He would play Count Dooku, and I would always play Obi-Wan. And then my sister would play Anakin, and we would reenact the final duel there. It was a great time. Like, and that's what I remember about Attack of the Clones. And I remember some of the behind the scenes. I believe they stuck them on the end of the VHS tape. I may be totally making that up, because I know they did that with the Phantom Menace VHS tape that we had. They had the version we had that the beginning documentary tacked on to the end of the VHS tape.
Huh.
But again, like, it's the thing where you remember the stuff as kids. I don't, to be honest. I'm wondering if I'm making stuff up because I'm just remembering it. If you email a StarWarsReport@gmail.com if you remember if you watched the VHS editions, if you were like late to the party on upgrading to DVD, if you were following the prequels, if I'm remembering this or making this up, I don't know.
Do you remember Sinbad being a co-host or an anchor in a late night movie marathon?
Yep, there's some blue leotards attacking Natalie Portman on the blue conveyor belt.
And I'm just looking at that right when you say that, doing like the Karate Kid stance.
Yep. Oh, man.
Would you like a really good, to cap it all off, a really good Geonosian arena story?
Oh, let's hear it, man. Yes. That'd be perfect.
Okay. So we all know the scene where Kit Fisto sort of gives a bit of a smile to the camera. And,
yeah.
And how popular that character has become. Well, what the guy who actually got to play is Kit Fisto, his name was Zach Jensen. He was a construction worker. He actually built the sets and pulled the sets down. And I remember we were sitting in one part of the lot one day, and Zach sort of came up, and he was really upset, and he said, oh, I've got to finish up today, guys. It's my last day. We pulled the last set down, and I'm no longer needed. And myself and the guy was with Justin. We said to Zach, you need to go to the casting agency, because at that time a lot of people were pulling out and not returning to dress up as some of the aliens. They said, and we told them that told Zach that you know they're screaming out for extras. So Zach went straight up to the casting agents, and he at the time had dreadlocks. He had like a big bushy head of dreadlocks, and the casting agency or the agents took one look at him and said, you're perfect for a Jedi.
Uh-huh. Oh, we lost you there for just a second, Warren. Almost.
Okay.
Oh, sorry. There's a slight delay. We lost you right at... So he was perfect for...
Yeah, so Zach was perfect for the role of a Jedi, because they needed to flesh out the Jedis in the Geonosian arena. But what Zach did was, between seeing the casting agency and coming back, he'd shaved all his dreadlocks off, and they were just the dreadlocks were what they initially wanted him to have as the Jedi. So what did they do? They replaced it with these big latex tentacles, and there we have Kit Fisto.
Nice.
Wow.
That's amazing. In fact, because I remember...
Kit Fisto might have had dreads then.
Yeah. If that was to play out the way they, I guess they had hoped, they really liked the idea he had dreadlocks, but...
His brother was Jesse, who played Stacey 10. I'm going to Wikipedia now.
Nice. Yes, and Jesse probably got the role after Zach had told him that we need to go and see these casting agents and get back on, because his time had come to an end.
What a world. What a world. Dude, that's amazing. That's amazing.
Way to look out for a fella.
Yeah,
awesome.
Yeah, that's awesome. All right, guys, I'm going to call it. Unfortunately, I'm going to push Boba's Bounty to next week. Because I know, we had a super short time frame, because a couple quick notes for you guys that you should know. We're moving our recording and release schedule for the remainder of the year. We're going to be doing the program Tuesday nights. And right now I'm working on a process. It'll be next week or the week after of getting it back up on Facebook Live. So make sure you go like the Star Wars Report's Facebook page. And turn on those notifications, and that way you'll know when we go live. We're going to be doing, of course, the Star Wars Report live Tuesday nights, and Star Wars Tonight is going to be launching in that final 30-day countdown. Because guess what, guys? We're less than 90 days out from The Last Jedi. Can you believe it? Crazy. Craziness. Warren, seriously, man, thanks so much for coming on and sharing some more behind-the-scenes stories of Attack of the Clones. Now, when you said you had a Natalie Portman story, I had no clue. I had no idea that it was that good. That's amazing.
Well, someone had to do it. Someone had to dance with Natalie.
Somebody had to make the sacrifice. You can check out all the notes for all the stories we talked about, as well as links to everything I'm about to give you at StarWarsReport.com in the show notes for episode 290. Oh, nine. That's because next week it's episode 300. We have absolutely nothing special planned. We'll probably just record a Star Wars Report podcast like we always do.
Well, lots of Sparta lanes.
Exactly. Big congrats, Mark, by the way. I know you're going to talk about it in Boba's Bounty, but congrats on Padawan's Perspective. It just reached its one-year anniversary, so big congrats on that.
Yeah, it snuck up on us. We're Facebook, thanks for letting us know. We'd probably forgot.
if you want to check them out, it's Padawan's Perspective. It's available on iTunes. If you want to hear the Star Wars talk from the perspective of the Padawans of some of the podcasters here on the network, you can. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast. If you're listening to this on iTunes, leave us a rating review. That really helps. Just go to StarWarsReport.com/iTunes, and we got it for you right there. Nice and easy to find. Facebook/StarWarsReport, Twitter.com/StarWarsReport, and you can find our personal accounts. It's at The Riley Guy and at Illogical Rogue 2. Warren, what's your Twitter handle? Can people find you online?
I don't use Twitter that much, guys. Just Facebook.
All right, cool. Well, we appreciate it, man. We'll throw links in the show notes. That does it. Another episode of the Star Wars Report in the can. We'll see you next week for episode 300. Good times to be had. We'll catch you soon. Remember, many Bothans died to bring you this podcast. And may the Force be with you. And thank you for riding Star Tours. Goodbye. Also, Kit Fisto did have a pretty sweet grin. I'm not gonna lie. That's the thing. That's another...